Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and health care. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson. Well, I'm having a lot of problems with the old internet today, so I don't really have any. Well, maybe I might have a little follow up here. I'm just looking at my my thingamajig, and everything's working so freaking slow. I mean, I can't get anything to rev up here. Good afternoon, this is Michael Lawson. It's Friday, it's 11:03. Normally, I would be playing some music here, but I can't get my thing going here. It's just going so slow. It's going so slow, I just can't understand it. Well, you know what that looks like? That looks like just what Uncle Donald said. Everything will be slower with Trump. Everything will be slower with Dumpity Boo. Yes. I don't understand what it is. I put it in, but it didn't come out. I have no idea how these things are going to be working. I'm looking at my screen, and all I have on my screen is dates. I don't have what it is. I don't know how it came out that way. And so I can't really say what I'm supposed to play to lead into you with. This is completely unbelievable. But I will definitely try to get something going here where I can lead you guys into something that you really would understand. Because I don't understand it. I mean, this is really unfreaking real. what they have for you. It really is something. Let's see if I can do this. Maybe this would come up. Let's see. I don't know. Nope. It won't go. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe that's because that's there. Now, let me give you a little bit what I wanted to say. This is what I wanted to say.
Any day now, I will hear you say goodbye, my love, and you'll be on your way. Then my wild, beautiful bird, you will have flown. Oh, any day now, I'll be all alone. When your restless eyes meet someone new, oh, to my sad surprise, tears of blue shadows will fall all over town. Oh, any day now, love will let me die.
To see if I can, because these numbers all are not right. I see, there it is. Did anybody hear about what happened in Arkansas? This is one of the things. This happened to a 5-year-old child in Arkansas. We're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about Governor Kemp's bullshit . bullshit, let's see, well, how can we put it, bill that he signed. About voting rights. Anybody hear about this? He signed a bill in Georgia makes voting completely bullshit. That's what she did. She signed a bill to make voting completely bullshit. That's right. That's why I said completely not even in the realm of being even conveniently correct. This bill is so outlandish that anybody, and you see, here's the problem with the bill. It just don't affect us. It affects those people that want to vote. Anybody that wants to vote. It makes anybody the right, who has the right to vote, completely bullshit. And the reason why is you no longer have the right to vote if you no longer have the right to vote if you can't be off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, before 5 o'clock. Because if you're not off before 5 o'clock, can't vote. I don't know what this is. This thing is open. I have no idea what they're saying. They're saying that if you can't get in and vote before 5 o'clock, you're out of it. If it's a hot day, and you're online, no one can bring you food. How about that? You cannot be brought food if you're online. You can't be brought anything to eat if you're online. You cannot have any sort of refreshments if it's 100 degrees out there and you've been standing online for hours. You can't be standing online. That's right. This is what it has come to. This is what it has come to. So, what are we to do with this? If you can't vote online, if you can't vote, what does this mean? If you can't vote. This child was 5 years old. Okay? This child is 5 years old. ask to go to the bathroom. This is in Arkansas. You understand? Arkansas. Kindergarten. He goes and, he asked to go to the bathroom. He goes to the bathroom. And when he comes back, he tells the teacher that the commode is stopped up. That's what he tells the teacher. The commode is stopped up. What do you think the teacher told him to do? What do you think the teacher told him to do? She bought him back to the bathroom where he was at and made him put his hands in the commode, and as he said, to pull out all the boo-boo and toilet tissue that he wiped himself with because he was responsible for it.
Hello everyone, Ara here. Welcome back. A story out of Arkansas. A kindergarten teacher that is a white female is on administrative leave and is also being investigated after she made a five-year-old pupil dig feces out of a toilet. This is very disgusting, actually. So the mother of this pupil is called Ashley Murray, and the pupil attends a school called Crystal Hill Elementary School in Little Rock. And of course, the mother wants the teacher to be terminated, and she's also seeking legal action. According to the report, the teacher forced the boy to touch the feces to teach him how not to stoop up the toilet, as she believes that he had used a lot of toilet paper.
Basically made him go on the toilet and get his feces and tissue, the dirty tissue, out of the toilet. You want a child to put their hand in there physically and clean out the commode? No. He's not a janitor. He's not a custodian. He's not maintenance. Not at all. When she got on the phone with me, she said she didn't have an explanation. She just knew she was wrong.
The mother of the boy was very shocked when the son told her this incident. Of course, any parent would be shocked. You would never, ever think of anything like this. So quoting her words, he just came to me and said, she made me get my boo-boo with my bare hands in the toilet. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, really? And he kept telling everybody, and I know he wasn't lying. The boy just kept on telling everyone. So the Pulaski County Special School District said it's investigating the situation, and the teacher has been placed on leave. And of course, quoting the words of the mother of the boy and also the grandmother of the boy, who are all talking on the situation of their boy, they say it's degrading for a child. So I don't feel like any child should go through this. I don't want another kid to have experience this. It's disturbing, belittling, it's very disgusting, you know, definitely. The mother of the boy says the teacher called her to apologize and said that she was sorry and she did not have any explanation. She admitted that she actually did that. The family is seeking legal action and they say the teacher's license should be revoked, and definitely such a person shouldn't be around anyone's kids. In addition to that, the family also opened up a GoFundMe page because they want to get counseling for the little boy and also be able to pay the lawyer. This one just beats my understanding. Like, you are an adult. how do you even think of that idea of making a child do that? You know, that's very nasty. It's very disgusting. I don't know what kind of teacher this one is. She definitely shouldn't be around anyone's children, you know, because a kindergarten teacher is supposed to be like very kind, you know, to the kids and very loving and very caring for the kids. So this is just like a horrible person, you know. You have to be a horrible person, a horrible, evil, nasty person to do something like this to a five-year-old. This is so disturbing, really. If you are a parent, definitely any parent, if I had a child in this school, I'm definitely taking them out of this school because you'd be concerned, you know. What kind of school would even hire such a teacher, you know, without any empathy for kids? Anyway, I share your thoughts about this story. It is very, very horrible. I mean, an adult doing that to a minor, it is... Let me know what you think in the comment section. You can check out my YouTube channel at Ray Kembabazi, my Twitter and Instagram also at Ray Kembabazi, and see you on the next story. Bye.
Now, I'm looking on YouTube and they're dancing on with this young lady. Some people might find it hard to understand her direction of the story, but why ain't this a freaking blown up story over everything? It's because these damn people, these racist damn people, don't give a damn. And they're doing everything they have to do since that damn fool, which I won't even mention his name, the armed man who was in the White House, came into office. None of this shit ever happened before. None of it. And I'm telling you, these people were there. They were always there. They were always there like thunderstorms are always there. But they didn't dare. They didn't dare come out and do shit like this. They don't give a damn. You think they would have did this under George Bush or Clinton or even Reagan? Storm the Capitol? And then say, no, we weren't storming the Capitol. We just wanted to go in and look. Come on. Give me a break. Come on, give me a break. This kid who is going around telling all everybody because he is in a state of shock and he needs psychiatric care now. People are crowd funding for the five-year-old black student as the kindergarten teacher made him pull feces out of the damn toilet with his hands. And you know what? This is not the first incident at Crystal Hill Elementary School in Little Rock, Arkansas. Just remember that. Boy, they would have had a major problem with me. They would have to have those daggone Arkansas State Troopers out there if they did that to my children or my grandchildren. This mother is strong. I would have went ballistic. That woman's head would have been in the freaking door, sucking out every damn thing. Maybe put my hands in the commode and clean out the feces and tissue because it stopped up the commode. All the mother said was what? She was talking to her mother. And she was in the car going to pick up her son then. So she told Fox 16, the superintendent of PCSSD called me at 6-something and said, I told him I want this teacher never do this ever again to another black student. I don't want to do it ever again. I don't want her to do this ever again to any student. Let alone a black student. He's a kid. First of all, he's not maintenance. And he's him to do. What? Yeah, he needs to go to the bathroom. He needs to be trained to go to the bathroom by himself. But he needs to have someone outside that bathroom, I believe, to give him help if he needs it. Every five-year-old is not up to doing this. She degraded him and belittled him. And he has, I'm sure he has anxiety. He's talking about this all night to everyone. And that freaking, the daggone woman would be sued. The principal would be sued. The teacher, the school would be sued. Superintendent would be sued. The state would be sued. And then I freaking even have to go sue this ass. Matt, let me calm down. Let me calm down. I sue everybody and their mother. That school would not exist again. All the money would be in my pocket. This woman's got a hidden agenda. Because this is not the first time she's done this. The teacher is Carla Lassiter. And she told the mother, I have no explanation. I was wrong. She's been placed on administrative leave with pay. I have been so, when I heard this, my hands shook. My hands were shaking when I heard about this. My hands were shaking when I heard about this. I don't know this child, but I know that this is some ignorant white teacher. And because it's a minority black population at that school, they don't give a damn. FBI, I know, is involved in this. And it says here that the FBI told her husband, said that her husband's businesses have received death threats. No shit. He would lose his freaking business. What kind of business? Oh, is it the business is called the Old Mill Pizza? Freaking hillbillies. I mean, are you kidding me? And now a boy died in the restaurant, and they had to shut down the place. They had 70 to 20 of his employees were terminated. I mean, it says, I'm reading a little bit more of it here. It says that the parents of another kindergarten student at Crystal Hill Elementary School told Fox 26 News that another teacher inflicted similar behavior on her daughter in the fall. Why is this school still open? I don't understand that. Her daughter was forced to pull toilet paper out of the toilet bowl with a bare hand after she used too much, the mother told Fox 26, on condition of anonymity. This is a common occurrence at this school, it seems. The school didn't answer numerous calls. How is this the only freaking daycare center? Well, you know what? You'll get so much money from these people. I'd open up three daycare centers. This is the Pulaski County Special School District. It's now being investigated. The whole thing, the whole school district. It's unclear whether the fall incident is under investigation. Facebook doesn't have any information either. But they have a GoFundMe page set up for Ashton's counseling and to assist the family with legal assistance if they decide to take legal action. What are you kidding me? What do you mean decide? How can they say they're deciding to take legal action? It's past deciding whether or not to take legal action. It's past that. I mean, I don't understand that. I don't understand that. I can't believe that a teacher would do this to a child. A teacher that wanted to go in to teaching little kids who don't know right from wrong, and do this to them. Ashton says the Canon video that the incident left him feeling bad about school. Said he wants to be a police officer or a soldier when he grows up. This is what this little kid said. This is what this little kid said. I mean, I'm sick to my stomach thinking about it. I am sick to my stomach just thinking about it. I just don't understand. I just do not understand. I just don't understand. And we have people out there who, what they think about. We have, you know, I don't remember the first day. How many of you out there remember the first day you went to school and how you felt? I have no idea. I don't remember it whatsoever. And I can't lie and say I did. I don't remember how I felt. I know when I was younger, I loved to go to school because it was a young girl I liked. And I don't know if I liked her in junior. I know I liked her in the second grade. So, but we were always in class together, which was kindergarten. No, I know I went to kindergarten. That's right, because I started in the first grade. That's back in the day when, you know, they give you tests and, hey, is he a dummy or he learned something? Hey, so I guess they thought I wasn't a dummy. But anyway, getting back to this, I want to know why this has not been a major story. I want to know why. Why has this not been a major story in the country? Why has this not been a major story? You know, I think I'm going to look this up here and see what the hell is going on here. Because I just don't see why this has not been a major story. Because this needs to be a major story. This is happening. Okay, yeah, there's some here. I I think so to say, oh, it shows the teacher here. Let's see if we have anything on this here. No. Let's see here. I don't know, it's running, but I hear nothing. But anyway, it's so outlandish. Well, let me answer the door. My grandkids coming in. Anyway, it's so outlandish that this kid had to clean out the toilet with his bare hands. It's so disgusting. There would be no place for these people to hide. There'd be no place. I would not even think about what I would have to do, because this would be outrageous. And the thing is that if we are not sharing something with the public on this, this is a major disgrace. It is. And I hope I'm on the air here. Let me check my thing. I should be, because I don't hear myself talking. Let me, nope, no more that. Let me make sure I'm on the air here. Yeah, I'm on the air. I guess I don't want to see you. Here's my, let me get this out of here. It looks like I'm not on the air. So let me go back here. See, I don't know if I can hear you. See, because I don't have somebody listening. So it looks like that I might have been dropped for some reason. Skype is very funny about that. They were out all day yesterday. So, okay, I'll go back to Skype. They were out all day yesterday, so they were having problems, but I don't think this is a problem with them. Let's see here. Let me close it out here. Let me call them up here. Where is that number? Come on. There it is. Okay. So, okay, let's see if I'm back on. Okay, go on, let's go. It looks like I am on, but I don't know if my sound is being heard. That's what I want to check. I want to check and see if the sounds are being heard, which I don't know if they are. And that's the problem. Let's see if I can hear it here. I see. Normally I can go on Skype and that I can't do. Normally I can go on Skype and hear the chat or hear myself talk. But if I can't and there's something wrong and I can't seem to get into Skype to do that. Unbelievable. But let's see, because I got people coming on here. Who's that? All right. Anyway, what I was saying, that this was the most disgusting thing I have ever heard. The most disgusting thing. That this child had to go through. It's the most disgusting thing. And anybody who says anything different is lying to you. To go in, as I said again, and I'm going to mention it again, having to go into the commode to pull out feces to clean it out, because you are the teacher and you're in charge. There will be nothing in Arkansas, or nothing to that teacher, or nothing to that school system, district, to have, or the police department, that could have prevented me from coming out there and putting that teacher's head in the toilet. Instruction. This is not instruction. You want to see instruction? Then you had the daggone person that cleans the toilet come there, and maybe you might have watch. That's even bad. But having a five-year-old put their hands in the toilet and pull out all this stuff is completely insane. And as I was saying, none of this would ever have happened without the orange man in the White House. This stuff, it was there. These people would have done it. But they got the okay, just like these fools who stormed into the White House got the okay because their man told them that they could do it. It's been a 400% increase, according to the Poverty Law Center, not Poverty Law Center, but Southern Law Center, that this stuff has been going on. Why? Why would people now get the to go ahead and start doing insane things like this? Why? Because their main guy is now the man in charge. That's why. The main guy is now the man in charge. Well, he was the man in charge. The man in charge anymore. And this is what we need to figure out, how we can get things back to where they belong. How do we get back to where they belong? You know what? I don't know if they can by themselves. There is enough people. There are enough people that can get this back to where it should be in this country. There's more than enough people. I'm looking right now, we got that damn Attorney General Paxton talking up this bullshit that they passed down in Georgia. And it's bullshit. Because it's not going to pass the civil rights through the Supreme Court. That's where it's going to go. It ain't going to pass. Because this is against voting rights. And it's not just going to, you think only black people work and get off at 5 o'clock? So that's why you're going to only have polls open from 8 to 5? Or you think it's a job to vote, huh? Why aren't people getting paid then if it's a job? They want to close the polling places at 5 o'clock. Now, you think that's just going to hurt African Americans, Hispanics, Asians? The majority of people are white. It's going to hurt them. But you know what? There's a lot more white unemployed also. So they're thinking, well, we'll just get by with just what we get by. If we get by with two votes, we get by with two votes. It don't matter. We got by. And here's the other explanation of what they want to do. they not only want to close the polls at 5 o'clock, but if the county that you live in, if your county votes blue, they have the right to go in there and change your county presentation to what they want it to be, red. I don't know how they could oversee, supersede people's voting rights, because that's what it's doing. That's why I never believe this is going to work in the Supreme Court. But they're going to tell the county that, you know what? You can't do any voting unless you vote our way. That's what it says. You're going to be made to vote their way. They can go into any county, any amount of counties, not one county, all the counties, and turn them all red. They can take over your county's votes. They can fire the superintendent in your county, put their own people in, and say, no, that's not the way they voted. Are you kidding me? This is what, I mean, this is because they said that we should have won. That's what they're saying. We should have won. I don't know how you, I don't know, what the hell is with these people? How the hell can they say we should have won? I mean, I don't understand that. What is the story here? We should have won. How is that even remotely close to what has happened? I don't know how it's even remotely close to what we say should have happened. I mean, this is it's almost laughable. But I tell you what, it wouldn't be that laughable if I was involved. I am so glad I am not down there in Arkansas. I am so glad. Because there would have been a major problem down there. A major problem down there. Now, we are going to have today also some good friends that some of you here in North Carolina know very well, and some of you might not know, but you probably know a friend of mine, Diane Little, who we have been involved in shenanigans together for a long time. And she introduced me last week. No, you know, she didn't introduce me. She pulled the wool over my eyes. So she didn't tell me what was going on. We'll talk about that later when she gets online. But she said, you got to come on this podcast and you got to listen to what we're talking about. I said, all right. I did not. Normally, I am busy as hell after my show on Friday because I'm on for 3 hours. And I have so much stuff I didn't do, and I have so much stuff to catch up to do. I'm assisting how much I can to throw the ball and catch the ball with Blake because I'm out of action. I'm getting my knee replaced on the 6th of April. So I am going to be on crutches or walker for 4 weeks minimum. I know how it goes because I have my right knee done, so that's the schedule. And he starts his baseball April 10th. So I am busy as hell. And now it's good weather now, which it wasn't good weather before. A lot of these Fridays, there's always thunderstorms and tornadoes. Oh, man, we had a big I'm telling you, I was up here putting my show together for today, and it was about 11:30, I think. And, man, we had such a major thunder. It shook my glass of Glenlivet that I had in on the bar here. I could see it shake. That's how it had to be right overhead. And then we saw, I was looking at the, I don't know why I was looking at the Weather Channel. No, I think they gave, no, there was a siren that there was a storm, tornadoes, and they had massive tornadoes. They had one that sat down for 100 miles, 4,200 miles of India, rest me. Anyway, so she said, oh, you got to come on, you got to come on and listen. They were doing a lot of things. Oh, I said, okay, hey, no problem with me. And it was a conversation of race and racism in America. What's so and what's next? And they had a lot of interesting people in there. I didn't know any of them. And that's very highly unusual for me. They had Eloise Harris and Jason Grunewald, I believe. That's how we'll get his name correct last time. And they had a few other people. Let's see, it was about six people. I think it was six, seven of us. And they had a real, and I did not say a word. You can laugh all you want, but I didn't say a word. I sat there and listened to the talk that they were talking about. And it was fabulous. They're going to be a guest for the next hour, but I'm going to lead them in by first asking them, what do they think of this teacher making his five-year-old child clean out the commode with his bare hands? You know, it don't even matter that he did it with his bare hands. To clean out the commode, that's what the hell is this woman talking about? What's she thinking about? People who are online now probably didn't hear me from the very beginning, but I was smoking because my veins were, I look at my, turn around, I'm sitting behind a mirror, sitting in front of a mirror, and my veins, I know, were popping out. If I could have turned around, I know they saw that. Because believe me, it was only, and this is not the first time it happened at this school, and the school is still together. What the hell are these parents doing at that goddamn school? What the hell is going on? Well, we're going to find out from our guest. And let me let our guest in. And Miss Diane Little, how are you?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you?
You are doing well. That's good.
Yeah, I'm doing well.
And let's see who we have here at 4524. Who's that?
That's Eloise Harris. How are you, Michael?
Thank you for having us on. No problem. And I guess this must be Jason.
Yeah, I'm here as well. Thank you, Michael.
And Jason, how do you say your last name? Did I say it correct?
Yeah, you were.
No.
It was. rare that folks get that. It's close.
Hand grenade, right?
That's right.
How
exactly.
do you say your last name? How do you say your last name?
I say it Grunewald.
Oh, Grunewald. Okay. All right. Well, I was close enough for a hand grenade, I guess. Okay.
That's right.
Diana, well, I'm going to ask you first. What do you think about this woman in Arkansas? And you sent me the information.
I certainly did, because I wanted you to put it on your show, because I thought
it was
so egregious.
Yeah, you wanted me to get a cardiac arrest, right? That's what it was.
No. No.
Because
let me start
I've had
saying...
a cardiac arrest ever since you gave it to me. I've been going ballistic.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
So tell me.
But,
what do you think about this?
What I think about what happened at the Crystal Hill Elementary School is racism. Plain and simple. You wouldn't do that to your own child. Why would she do it to that child? And it scarred him. I mean, she even called the mother after it occurred, and the mother, to apologize, the mother asked her, why did you do it? And she said, I don't know. That's just white superiority. That's all that is, for her to be able to say that. I think it demeaned the young man. It demeaned him, and it dehumanized him. No one would do that. They have custodians there.
But you see, here's a problem.
That's what I think.
Calling the mother is even more racist. How do you even think that you could call somebody after you did that? I would want to go hide in a freaking West Virginia mountain somewhere. Because I'll tell you, if it happened to my kids, that's where she would have to go. Because she would be a deep, deep boo-boo, as the young man said. I mean, to even call the mother, there is no apology that can be done. There is none.
Yeah.
No.
I agree.
There is no apology. None whatsoever. Eloise, what do you think about that?
So the act is despicable. The teacher's act is despicable. And I take a different tact from you, Michael, in that I think that this is an opportunity. You ask, why is the school still, I think you said, I don't know if you said open or still existing.
Right. Yes.
With these multiple, we find that there are multiple incidences. On the video, the grandmother said it was the same teacher.
Yes.
In the narrative of the story, it didn't say that. It sounded as though there was another teacher who had done the same.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah. So this is an what I see from the, first of all, we have to take care of the child. So the child has been, I would say that he has been victimized. And then the story has been elevated by his grandmother to a public story. And I'm not sure that I really don't agree with the grandmother, because I think she stepped in front of the parent. And at the same time, now that the story is public and we know about it, then what are the actions that can be taken? And so as I see it, the apology was appropriate, though that child needs to be apologized to by his teacher, say down on her knees or in a chair so she can get eye to eye with him, because he's disliking school because of what she did to him. The other thing is that there's an opportunity here for the school to take an action and retrain their teachers, not just this teacher, but all of the teachers need to be retrained in how to treat children. That's a majority black school, so race is an issue. Race is always an issue with those of us who are African American, black, people of color. So that is, I think that the school and probably the school system, the district, needs to retrain all their teachers, all every one of them. So I have a different tact from you. I think that there are some actionable steps that need to be taken to protect the children's safety and health.
That illusion?
Say again.
Go ahead.
I'm done. I'm done. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Eloise. Can you hear me?
I didn't understand what you said.
Okay, yeah, because someone was calling in and my earpiece took it over. So finish up what you were saying.
You,
I'm sorry.
You want me to repeat what I said?
Yes, please repeat what you said.
Okay, I'll repeat. So what I said was the teacher's act to have the child put his hand in the toilet for any reason was despicable. And I will say that she eventually said to the parent, she didn't know why she did it. The teacher didn't know why she did it. She did it because she's the teacher in charge of a classroom of kindergartners and she can pretty much do what she wants to do. So she had the power to do it. But there's something missing there for her. Besides empathy and sensitivity to the child, Diane talked about white supremacy, or I'll say white privilege. She may not even know that she's got it. So that's missing. That's a missing that needs to be unconcealed, if you will, with the teacher. And what I said is that there, I would go farther to talk about, I know that everybody wants to punish the teacher and take her job away and what have you. What good is that going to do? She just won't be there. And there are other teachers there who probably are harboring the same kind of insensitivities. Maybe they just don't
come
out that way.
There is. It did. There was another teacher that did the same thing.
Yes.
In the fall.
So Michael, I think that what the good that can come out of this, because we really need to look beyond just the incident. The good that can come out of this is that that entire school district can retrain their teachers. They need some sensitivity training about how to treat children. They teach children, and they don't know how to treat children in the classroom. So the children's health and safety is important, and their mental well-being, and their socialization skills that are being built in that classroom, their relationship to adults who are in authority over them, all of that in play here. And race is in play as well, because you've got a majority black school, and this particular teacher is white. I don't know about the others, but this is a white teacher in charge of a classroom of kindergartners who are mostly black. So there is a race issue. And there's an opportunity for retraining and putting good teachers back in the classroom. In the meantime, the child needs to be taken care of. We need to be sensitive to his needs. So he's in that place of, I don't like school and she doesn't like me. And then there's whatever's happening in the household now, because you've got angry mother, angry grandmother, and the child picks up on those cues. So there's that as well. That child's psyche is at least temporarily damaged. It may not be permanent, and some counseling would be helpful there. So that's my
take. Jason, what's your just having us? And I don't give you my
yeah.
Jason, what do you say?
Yeah, it's a degrading act. And it's one that has the potential for that lasting impact.
Yep.
On the boy, on the other students, on the culture of the school, the community. And what it reveals is when it occurs to one, in this case the teacher, that degrading another human being by having them, a child no less of five, reach into a toilet full of feces, clean out toilet paper and the feces. I mean, it reveals the way the mind relates to that child and that experience, that it could in any way justify giving that command. And I think for us inside of this conversation around race and racism, you know, we often struggle with people saying, well, I'm not racist. I don't see color. And yet there are moments like this where it becomes evident that that's not in fact the case. So I think what it allows all of us is to really look at how it plays out in real life, in people's experience. And this is what actually happened. And metaphorically, this type of degrading action happens very often. And so I think it's important that we talk about what are the proper ways to relate to each other. including and especially in our classrooms.
Well, I want to tell you something. All you people are so nice. You you've given a nice, reasonable approach to solving this. And it's very well reasonable and very well is was far concerned, as far as I'm concerned, pain. Because they would have to have the state police there if that was my child. That's the first thing. State police with the National Guard. Because there is no excuse with the only reason why this woman probably even has a job is because of the orange man we had in the White House. Only reason. This didn't come over her. This has always been there. Always been there. And there are people out there who are just like this, and we now see them, and a lot of them are in the Congress. But we would not have seen these people like they are now if it wasn't for the orange man that was in the White House before. We would never have seen these people. Hey, now we know what these people, and remember, these people already revealed themselves. They can't go back and say, no, I was never like that. The only way they could go is go forward. That's the only way they could go. So, and that's what's going to kill them. And see, here's the main thing about this, just get on a little political end of it. We cannot have a one-party system in this country. We've got to have a two-party system because the one-party system will become, hey, the predominantly ruler. We can't have that. We got to have both sides. So the thing is that with me, when you say that the school I believe the school needs to be dissolved, and the whole district needs to be dissolved and recreated. You know,
well, Michael,
I did a lot of things. I did a lot of things. Hold on, I did a lot of things in my life. A lot of things. And the thing is that when I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, my grandfather was a major in the Army, 52 years, World War I as a private, all the way up, supervisor in the post office. My mother didn't work when I was a child. She didn't start working until I was about 8 or 7. I went to Catholic school my entire life. My brothers and cousins did too. Went to the same Catholic school. I never, ever, ever, ever saw any racial discrimination. Now, I must be lucky. And maybe I just looked past it. Things in my family, that had to be pretty bad because my grandfather was a major. He was a major outside, too. He was a loud mouth. He was in the legislature in the county, and he was fighting for civil rights every day. My mother was, too. She was the first black woman to be a supervisor in the sanitation department in the county division. She was a supervisor, first woman. So I've been involved in politics since I can remember. And seeing all the things down that happened down south and all the unruliness, you know, I saw that and said, boy, how do these people do that? And my grandfather would curse my mother, they would go ballistic over what was happening down south. And I never saw anything racial in my life until I went into the Air Force one time. And that was the guy who was in the next room for me. He said the N-word. He was from Ohio, and he was a good friend. We used to go out drinking. He wasn't in my class. He was in another class. But I wanted to knock his block off when I heard that. And my roommate said, hey, let's bring him in and talk to him. And my roommate was a white guy, another white guy. And we brought him in, and you know, he was saying the word, just saying the word. He didn't know how bad it was or how reactive it was. It was a word he heard his entire life, like cat or dog. So there are some people that just don't know a damn thing. They're just dumb. And you got to let them slide. But putting the hands on the toilet ain't one of them. And I remember when I came down here, I was out of, I worked for Weather Service for 25 years. I'm retired. I came down here, and I started teaching school. I didn't have a license to teach, but my daughter was in a school that was a gifted school, academic school, sing, dance, and everything else. So the teacher who was a star, he always wanted to go to Broadway. He'd been in a lot of places and whatnot. I told him, we had talks about my mother was the first black theatrical agent in New York City. I've been around in showbiz, in and out of nightclubs when I was 5 years old with strippers. Didn't mean nothing to me. But I was there because I went everywhere my mother went. And my brother stayed home with my father, but I'd like to go. And the thing is that he said, well, you know, if you want to teach, I'd like someone to teach film here. And that's what I knew. So I said, I'll teach film. And I said, I'll teach one class. I started teaching that one class. And it was an hour and a half a day. And the kids got so enthralled with it, I had to create another class. And I so therefore, at the end of 4 years, I would teach you four different classes a day. Well, not a day, two classes a day, but four different classes a week. And what I want to say about that is that I realized that I wish I always had been a teacher. Because you know what's so great and teaching is when you look at a child and the child's eyes light up because they understood what you said, you know you got your point across. And if any one of these teachers in that school are not there because they love kids first, I don't give a damn if they don't know a damn thing. If they don't know like kids first, they don't need to be in there. And one of the main things when I was teaching, I was a part of this school that was being created here in Charlotte. I was on the board, and I would not ask. I asked what the first question I would ask the teachers when they were being interviewed. I'd say, "What is the first thing you do when you're in a class? When you walk into a classroom, what do you do?" If the kids are already in there. And these teachers say, and these teachers have been there teaching 10 years, 15 years. All right, so everybody be quiet now. Sit down. We're going to, I want to tell you who I am. No, you don't tell kids to shut up. That's nonsense. That's not the way you go into a classroom. They never saw you before. There are many ways you need to treat kids, and if you don't love kids, you don't belong in the profession. And that's what needs to be done. I believe that school, this is not the first time they've had something like this in that school, and that school, it says it's happened many times. So that school needs to be completely dissolved and redone. And having let me give you an explanation why I did this. There ain't no explanation why I did that. There is none. That we're satisfied with satisfaction. So that's my take.
So, Michael.
Anybody?
This is Diane.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the. The fact that he was traumatized, he was walking down the street with his mother, and everybody that walked past them, he would stop them and tell them what the teacher did. So, of course, it was overwhelming for him. And I realized that those types of things stay with children, because I have stuff that has stayed with me. However, what the bright star here for me was that the was the immediate response from the community. I mean, immediately. Now, if this had happened before, that means other parents didn't think that it warranted any type of checking.
Right.
It didn't warrant any kind of news. But this community went directly into action. Before the news media got to the story, there was a videotape where a gentleman, a father of a child in the school, actually, without showing his face, interviewed Ashton to tell him exactly what happened. And then he spoke to the mother and he spoke to the grandmother, and he set up a GoFundMe page for legal costs because he just knew that this was going to court. And this was the same day of the incident. And then the other part that I was happy about is that there's a petition online. It's called, the website is change.org. And they're asking for the teacher's immediate dismissal. And as of March 25th, 13,716 people have signed the petition, and they've raised over $10,000, which was exceeding the goal of five. So even though something bad happened, it's just like for me, the George Floyd incident. That was dehumanizing for me. I can't even say it because that's how I felt. It was so dehumanizing. However, something good came out of that. His death was a sacrifice. And so I'm appreciating the immediacy of the response of the community, before the school, before the media. Now, of course, they say that the teacher, has rights, and the superintendent is saying that there's a Teacher Fair Dismissal Act. And that allows the teacher to go before the board of directors for a hearing before any firing. There is no doubt that they are going to get rid of this teacher. They're going to want to make sure that they've dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's. And who knows? She could go somewhere else to another school. We can't stop that. What we can deal with is probably helping that community. However, I've signed a petition. And the reason why I signed the petition is because there is no classroom in that school that she should be able to work. It just isn't. I mean, as it is, Ashton was re-enrolled in another class, but he's still in the building, a building he said he didn't want to go back to. Ashton is my future. If you heard the young man, he may be 5 years old, but he sounds like he's seven. He's brilliant. And so I don't want anything taken away from him because of someone else's racist attitude. So I think that the bright star here is the fact that the community acted immediately, as soon as they heard it.
I'd like to have Eloise and Jason wrap this up so we can get into what they're here for. Eloise, what's your final conclusion?
I'm glad that Diane, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad that Diane mentioned change.org. I'll go there to read and possibly sign the petition.
Yes, I will too.
And I get that Ashton is back in a school that she's not particular about being in. I agree that he sounds like a really smart kid. I chuckled at his statement when Mr. Cannon on the video asked what did he want to do. And he said, now let me see. So it also points to that he is, I'm struggling to get the word, but he's flexible. That's not the word I want, but he's bouncing back.
Mm-hmm.
And at age five, that's what children do. If you observe children who are young, they bounce back rather quickly. So he's going to be victorious in this. And my take is simply that we want all of the children to be well treated in whatever school system they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, when you talk about taking the school down or the system down, and recreating it, or creating it anew. That is what we need to do throughout our country, because we do have inherent in America is a systematic racism. It's been there since before America was actually America.
Mm-hmm.
It started in 1619, if not before.
Yep.
So it's built into the system. And we need, we do need recreation. We need new.
Yes.
How to get there, that's the question.
How to get there. Well, Jason, since you and I are the only guys on this call here.
Yeah.
What's your tie up?
Well, I want to acknowledge you for having gotten into teaching and then through that experience recognized what a difference it made for the students and how you could envision a future of having been a teacher for your career. One of the topics that we've covered inside of our conversation around race and racism in America is the school-to-prison pipeline and how predictive it is when our young black boys by the fourth grade have been set up to fulfill the next cycle of prison population.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And one of the very informative sources that we covered was Dr. Juwanza Kanjufu. And he looked at this pipeline of how we treat black boys at very young age such that they lose interest in school, such that we target their behavior and label it as bad and disruptive and then punish them in the school system such that their interest wanes. And by the fourth grade, we have set them up. And that also looks like we don't have black men in the school systems teaching our young black children. Very often,
Absolutely.
It is the white teacher. So I think there's a lot at play here, and we can see how this sets up a system that sets up our young children for, you know, a future that does not fulfill their potential.
Now, leading into the story of race and racism in America. Eloise, how can we, or Jason, how can we lead into how it ties in with what you guys are doing, which is what I wanted to do?
Mm-hmm.
How does this lead into what you, because I thought it could lead in quite well in what you guys are trying to do with your conversations. Jason,
you want to take that?
anybody wants to take it?
I can. We created a conversation, the three of us, and invited us others whom we knew to attend. And then we were a group of, I guess we could say we were a group of like-minded people wanting to learn more about ourselves and others, other cultures, other races, if you will. And but we are mostly a black, and it's a black-white conversation primarily. And let's see, how do I? So I'm going to repeat what we call the conversation. It's the conversation, race and racism in America. What's so and what's next?
Right.
Now, your question, I believe, has to do with how does that conversation – tell me again, is it how the conversation changes things? What's the impact?
How can your conversation, your immediate group, look at what we just saw with this five-year-old child and what conversation you can have over this?
We have a WhatsApp. It's called the Conversation Racism And so a video like that would be shared to the WhatsApp, and people would comment there in the WhatsApp. That goes all week long. So that part of the conversation takes place during the course of the week, and people post whatever they want there. And it could be, for us, a conversation on our Zoom call, which is our Friday call for an hour and a half, from 7:30 to 9 p.m. And so it could very well fit in with the other some of the other assignments that we give. We have assignments during the course of the week that prepares us for the conversation on Friday. So that's one way to lead into that particular conversation about Ashton and the school district that he is a part of, and what then can take place as a result of us, our group, seeing it, watching it. I hope that answers the question.
Jason, do you have anything to add to that?
If I may, two parts. One is to further on the logistics. So what we have chosen to do is get together on a Friday evening. We do that via Zoom. There are typically 16 to 20 people that join us on a given Friday evening, and our range has been anywhere from 13 to 25. I would say 16 to 20 is most often right where we are. And so it really has facilitated a conversation. We chose to look at the systemic nature of racism in America. So that was really the what's so portion. We did that over the course of more than 30 consecutive weeks, shortly after George Floyd was murdered until about the first of the year. We didn't miss a single week. We took 2 weeks off for Christmas and New Year's, but otherwise we have met every single week since basically George Floyd was murdered. And we've looked at the criminal justice system, the political system with things like voting, the financial system, the impacts of redlining, hiring decisions, entrepreneurship, the education system, health and healthcare, and then how it pervades society and culture. So you're asking, you know, how do we lead in with topics like this? Well, we've done that, you know, that is our challenge. It's very easy for someone like George Floyd to be murdered in a few weeks, the news cycle shifts and we're on to something else. And so this has been a very intentional effort to make sure that every week, every day, we are looking at the impacts in our society, in our communities, in our family, in our relationship. And so our commitment is to really transform the way that we look at this conversation and engage in it.
Diane, what's your
Well, Jason and Eloise, of course, are very, very correct when they say that we're doing this intentionally. And my take is, we are examining. We have a group of people that are willing, because some people are not willing. This is not always an easy conversation to have. But we're examining racist conditions and social systems and laws that are impacted by a social construct called race. That's pretty much what we're doing. We realize the word race is a social construct, but racism is real. Matter of fact, Jeffrey Robinson, one of the people whose documentaries were so pivotal during our criminal justice system piece, he said that racism is social power and legal authority. Social power plus legal authority equal racism. And black people and people of color have never had that in this country. So what we're attempting to do, and we have a very diverse group of people ethnically, race-wise. It's nicely diverse. And there are people who are willing to do this Friday after Friday, and they're growing, and they're able to see racism for what it is and some of their implied biases if they're white and some of the history that we need to know in order to move forward if we're being black. And so with that, we attack certain things. We know that, and we started, Michael, from before slavery. Then we got into slavery. Then we went Jim Crow and the runaway slave patrols, and we went on down into all the other types of things, the mass murders of black people in different towns like Oklahoma and Florida and Missouri. And we're still working to this day, to the current attack on voting rights in 2021.
Yeah. And we're back to Jim Crow again.
Okay. But at least we have the difference between Jim Crow and now is not necessarily power. I believe the difference is we're aware. Just like that group of people in that community, without even asking the mom, got together and started doing something. And so that, to me, is the difference.
Yeah, but what was the hook that started them to do it? Why didn't they do this the first time it happened? Because this is not the first time.
The parents didn't tell
them so.
The children that happened to, their parents did not come forth. So there might be some fear. We don't know. You know, we see it's in Arkansas. It's in Little Rock. Come on. Last time we had to deal with our children, they had to be taken to school by law enforcement in order to go to school. So this is not exactly a place of openness and people who are woke. And so perhaps those parents didn't know. There was some fear there. But this grandmother
put
it on Facebook.
Now, the grandmother put it on Facebook. And the young man is telling everybody.
Yes.
He's telling everybody. Those other things probably said nothing.
You know, and here's one other thing that I'll just put into that, Michael, is, you know, it's like, well, what do we do when these news stories come to our attention, and how do we, Diane, Eloise, and I bring this into our Friday night conversations? Well, I think it's like this. One of the things that I think is interesting is it's so obvious for us as human beings to see the degrading of an innocent 5-year-old little boy, how insulting that is. Yet what is it about us as human beings in this society that by the time that young boy becomes 18, 20 years old, the same type of degrading treatment in a prison, we've become none too accepting of, and we don't get nearly as insulted by.
Right.
It's almost like we expect that. And we have that same type of degrading treatment of our fellow citizens when they're in prison. And we don't have the collective society, rarely is this impassioned about that type of degrading treatment. And when we get to that point as a society, then we will be making progress because we are dehumanizing people. And yet it's insulting at 5, obviously, right? But I assert when we feel that way, when they're 18 and 20, we should feel the same.
Yeah. We have a caller in here. 4272, can you tell us who you are? Hello? 4272?
Yeah, I am Andy Duncan from Monroe, North Carolina.
Okay, Andy. And what did you want to say?
Well, I was just listening to what you were talking about, but I mean, I think, you know, even now we have a situation which speaks to the greater problem of racism and dealing with Asian American and Pacific Islander community. You know, they have seen racism in the past year to spike up, and I saw something where Reverend Al Sharpton was speaking out, and he said that, you know, that the African-American community needs to be united behind the Asian-American community and Pacific Islanders because the African-American community understands this kind of racism. They've endured it for a long period of time. And you know, I just thought that was really interesting. And, you know, somebody you know, Sharpton, he speaks to a lot of people, and, you know, that just, that, you know, really resonated with me, you know, and as being a Caucasian American, you know, I just don't think racism on any level is acceptable, you know, but I'm worried about the, you know, the current climate, huh?
Well, you're absolutely right. And the problem is with the current climate is that it can't change by those people that are doing it because they have now gone over the Rubicon. They cannot go back and say, you know, I never said anything like that. What are they going to do now? They can only go one way. And that's off the cliff.
Well,
going one way, and it will happen.
Well, I mean, yeah, I just think that, you know, the rest of us who are more empathetic to the plight of people who are the racism is perpetrated against, or we just have to stand up to it. I mean, that's all we can do. We can say that this is not right, and we're not going to stand for it. And if we see it happening, we have to address it immediately.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, it's personal responsibility. That's where it lies at. I mean, I'm really fortunate being the child of parents who grew up in a Jim Crow South that they didn't those attitudes weren't, you know, relayed to me. You know, I went to integrated schools in the 70s. I had black friends, Asian friends, you know, I mean, it was just, you know, but I don't know. It's just this current climate of the racism and the hate going on is something that makes America look ugly. You know, the rest of the world looks at it and they go, "What the hell is going on with America?" You know, after the civil rights era so long ago, over 50 years ago, why are people still perpetrating hate? You know, but
well,
I mean,
well,
I think the problem is that hate gets taught to people. You don't grow up as a child learning to hate someone because of their ethnic origin. That's something that's taught to you. And, you know, it was pretty prevalent when, you know, Charlottesville happened and all those white supremacists were up there, you know, parading around, you know, that this stuff is still going on, you know.
Absolutely.
And if people aren't directly involved in it, they're sympathetic to it.
Well, Andy, you're absolutely correct. And the thing is that this has always been here. This, because we had the Civil Rights Bill and the bills that President Johnson got passed, 64, 65, that didn't make anything go away. That just made these people go recessed. They just recess, and they're still here, and they're still, just like you said, they're teaching it, because that's all they know.
Yeah,
of course. That's all they know.
They're going to keep on perpetrating their ideas as long as somebody will listen to them.
Absolutely.
You know, but I think what we have to look forward to is that mostly the younger generation, like my children who are 23 and 26, the more of the millennials, that is not accepted among them. You know, it looks like that generation, they're starting to push back against it pretty heavy. You know what I'm saying?
Jason,
and they're also
go ahead, finish your point.
They're also very concerned about LGBTQ rights, which is something I met Senator Jeff Jackson recently, and he was asked that question. He was like, you know, that's something that's very important to him as a millennial. You know, he's only 38 years old, and you know, that's a question, you know, we're having in this country, and it's part of people's civil rights. I mean, when people are attacked verbally and physically because they're homosexual or they're transgender or whatever, that, you know, that kind of speaks to, it's just the same kind of hate, it's just in a different form.
Yes, yes. Jason, do you have something to add to that? Jason?
No, I think that's... I totally get that perspective, and
Eloise?
I thank you, Andy, for sharing it.
Yes, thank you, Andy, for calling in and speaking your truth.
I agree with you that we should be united behind the beside the AAPI community, and we should find the racism that they are impacted by just as unfortunate and despicable as the racism that we as African Americans have experienced. And I'm glad that you are, you find it unacceptable, and that you have hope through your children and their generation that it will get better. I don't know that I am, that I necessarily hold hope in the same way. Nonetheless, I do believe that we can make it.
Go ahead. Hello?
Yeah. You know, one thing I would maybe add, Michael, to this is we discussed a book in our group called Cast, which was written by a woman named Isabel Wilkerson. And what she asserts in that is what we have in America is a race-based caste system. And within that structure, we have ordered and ranked people based on ethnicity and race. And so by agreeing in solidarity to break down those structures and not pit African Americans against Asian Americans, Indian Americans, Native Americans, right, all the ways that we've structured, I do think that solidarity is really important, because what has happened as a result of white supremacy is working to pit groups against each other and not have solidarity. And I really do think it's important, and it behooves us all to really say that we are standing against hate in whatever form it arises, against whichever group it's perpetuated at.
Right.
And including gender and other traits. So that to me was also an important construct to consider, like, wow, we really do rank people in this country.
You know, it's so funny you even mentioned that, because when my mother, Muriel Gloria Lawson, but she calls herself Gloria, I believe was the smartest woman to ever live. Now, I'm just saying it because she's my mother.
I thought I was.
I know you aren't. I'm sorry. My mother, okay, I never thought she was the first black woman to be a manager, supervisor in the sanitation department for the city of New York, for the, in the county. And she could add 15 numbers upside down to come up with the right answer. And we'd go to the store. When I was a little kid, I used to watch her. And, you know, back in the old days, they had paper bags, and the guy used to write down what the price was. This is 10, this is 5. This is, and he'd write them all down, and he ended up, she'd tell him what it is. And he said, oh, yeah, you're right. And she did it upside down. So the thing is that when I was a kid, we had the first TV in my school when I was going to school, first grade. I remember I was 3 years old, 4 years old maybe. And the kids used to come over to my house on Friday and watch cartoons, Farmer Gray cartoons, and Pinky Lee, and Howdy Doody. So they came on like 5 o'clock, 5:30. Anyway, she taught me when we were there by ourselves, when watching TV, commercials, why they have to have commercials. Now, you know, most parents aren't going to teach their kids about commercials, why they got this commercial, and look at what they're advertising, look what they're selling here. You know, but she did. And after all, then she was the first black theatrical agent in New York City, first female black theatrical agent in New York City. Her office was on Broadway, at 52nd Street. And I used to go up there all the time when I was a kid, and that's when I said I used to go out with her to all the clubs and whatnot. But anyway, the thing was that she told me, look, never forget nobody out there, white, black, brown, purple, green, is smarter or better than you. You know as much as they do. Most of the time, they think they know, and they're trying to bluff. And that's what, when I started teaching school, I used to teach this program called Media Literacy. And remember that only 70% of what people say is true. The rest is bullshit. It's gobbledygook. And you only have to know about 15 or 20% of what they're talking about to understand what is really going on. But if you listen to 30% of what they're saying, boy, you got the whole picture. So anyway, she said, never forget that these people don't. And so I never felt subconscious. My school was all white. There was only one other black student in my class when I went to elementary school, Catholic school. And I never thought that I was less smart than any of them, even though I knew there was one kid in the class, Stephen Curtis, genius. He got 90 plus on every test. The only thing I beat him in was handwriting. I had a bad, because he's the greatest at handwriting back then. And I could write better than him. I got a 95 and he got a 90. So because he was a good writer too, handwriter. But so the thing is that everything comes from what you're taught. If you're taught that maybe you might be inferior, you're going to feel that way. If you're not taught that you're not inferior, you're not going to be taught that way. If you're taught that, hey, you know what? Some people know more than you, so you need to listen. Some people don't know more than you, but you still should listen to them. But remember, they don't know more than you. So there's plenty of ways to be taught how to get through this life.
I totally agree with you. However, I grew up, you know Canarsie,
yes,
and you know Queens. And that's,
yes,
okay. So we were lucky or fortunate black people that we grew up in a diverse enough system,
yes,
where if you had those types of things going on, somebody was going to have a plaque and there was going to be a march. And before we know it, we were going to be in court and things were going to get handled. I, too, never thought little of myself because I had parents who did the same thing. You're the most brilliant person in the world if you want to be. That was the way they felt. However, I think environment plays a big part in how children especially, how they interpret things. Because your parents could tell you you're good, and that's great. But if the world out there is constantly telling you you're not, Eloise, I'm going to tell you, this conversation has just really humbled me because there are things about my culture that I didn't know, that I've never experienced. Eloise told us in one meeting that she remembers the white fountains and the fountains for colors. To me, that was ridiculous. Now, me and my friends, we would all went to the white fountain in a minute. But she must not have had the environment to do that. It would have cost too much. And when it costs too much, you just don't do it. Eloise, am I speaking correctly about that?
Correct. White and colored fountains, white and colored bathrooms. And the way they were marked. Colored women, white ladies.
Oh.
Well, see, my wife, you know, the only time I was down south is when I was playing baseball. That's the only time I was ever down south. And I went down south, and we went, that was in like 1971, playing baseball. I was playing 74 baseball. We took a trip down south of the Greenville, I think it was Greenville. And my coach, his parents were down there, and I could stay. I stayed with them at their house, and I remember waking up the morning. It was Sunday morning, it was early, like 5 o'clock in the morning. I said, "What the hell is all this noise?" I opened up my door to the bedroom. I looked down the stairs, and there was this. There was his father, and he had this. He had money that he was paying out, and the guy was giving him these bottles. And I said, "What the hell is going on down there? It looked like water. So what the hell is he buying water for?" And I didn't know. It was moonshine. I didn't know anything. But anyway, what am I supposed to know? So the thing was that I didn't know they did things like that 5 o'clock in the morning. So the thing is that if this is the case, that's the only time I was down south. And I never felt, and we never went any place where it was other people, especially white people, baseball field, their house, then we went back home. So the thing is that I never saw that racism white. Why, I have never seen a white bathroom sign or a black bathroom sign or white woman sign or white or black woman sign. I never seen it. I still haven't seen anything like that. So there's a lot of things
like
I've been
said,
all over the world.
That's the privilege. That's the privilege.
Michael, if you're ever doing antique shopping, you may actually come across a store where those signs are still being sold. They are sold as memorabilia. I have been in when I was so insulted when I walked in and found out that a white owner of a store, a woman, she worked there or she owned it, and there were the colored and white signs being sold. As there are people who they are collectible, and it's insulting for me.
Well, I'd like to find out where that place is at. I go there in a minute. I go there in a minute. I want to ask them why they're selling this sign. Why are they selling this stuff? I said, make money. Hey, you're poor. Hey, I'll give you a dollar. Well, I mean, what's the story here? I mean, this is just unbelievable. But you see, this was before the Orange Man in the White House, or was this after the Orange Man in the White House? But it's still
signed. Oh, no, this is before. He didn't create the system. He profits and lives prosperously in the system and causes others to falter inside the system, but he didn't create it.
Well, Andy
said earlier that he talked about the current, he's worried about the current climate.
Yes.
And I wrote down, I said, the current climate is always the current climate.
Right. It's always been this way.
So this current climate goes back hundreds of years. It's modern now. It has a different phase, but it is still the climate that got created.
Right.
This is a created, you know, race is a created conversation. It's a created designation to separate people. That's the intention. And we're still separated. So it's still the current climate.
Lee Little, are you on the phone? What do you got to say about that? Lee Little?
Yes, I am on the phone. I was just sitting listening. And,
I know you
got
to say something about that.
Ridiculous. Pardon?
I know you have something to say about that.
Well, I mean, the whole race construct is foolishness. You know, something that was created to make us feel less than, but it's not true. You know, if anything, I mean, if you look at the genetics of the entire situation, they're the ones that have the Neanderthal DNA. And, you know, so, I mean, it's just ridiculous for anybody to feel that they're any better than anyone else. And I'm totally opposed to that. And I've traveled the world. And it's unfortunate that some people think that.
Well, that's all
I can say. But Brink, I mean, when you look at the history of the world, I mean, the people that created math and science, and I mean, Hippocrates went to the University of Timbuktu and learned from Inhotep, but people won't tell you that. So it's that whole thing is negative lie that they created to make themselves feel good.
You know, I don't know why I was thinking about that when you were talking. It just came to my mind, and I've told this story before. I want to make it short, but so before I was born, my mother got married to my father. She was about 19, and my grandfather, well, as I said, he was a captain then. Anyway, what happened was that my father was stationed at the Army Air Force Base in Topeka, Kansas. And my mother said, well, I'm getting ready to have the baby. He can't come home. I'm going down there. So my grandfather said, no, hell, you ain't going down to Topeka, Kansas. You must be crazy. That racist daggone place. He said, well, I'm going down there. So major thing, Dad, a big fight. So he said, okay, you can go. So my mother had to take the train down there. She's leaving now Long Island, Long Island City, take the train into Manhattan, switch trains, go on another train, taking the train. And in Washington, everybody that was black had to get up and go in the back. So when my mother got on the train from Jamaica into Manhattan, my mother is very, very fair. And they thought she was white. They never asked. They just assumed it. And you know what happens when you assume? You make an ass out of you and me. But anyway, they assumed that. So they kept her here. They kept her in the white cars. And they, because she was pregnant, though she was 7 months pregnant, I think, or maybe eight months, something like that. Anyway, They kept her in the white cars, and the conductor went and got the food for her when she needed food. And my mother had never been out of Brooklyn, Queens, of Manhattan before. And she ain't never thought about races down there in the South. That ain't nothing on her mind. Ain't thought about it. So she went along with the ride. And then when she got to Topeka, Kansas, they got off. They said, where are you going? I'm staying at such a hotel. And she made these reservations from Jamaica where she lived. They didn't know she was black or white. And when they got to the hotel said, oh, come on. Yeah, Mrs. Lawrence, come right in. You know, oh, yeah, your husband's in the Air Force. Fine. All right, you come right here. We'll take good care of you. They put her in the hotel. They don't know she's black. So the story is that when I want to make this short, what happens? So she goes in. She can't see my father the first couple of days. She finally gets a chance to go in because he was working. So they go in, and she meets the doctor, and the doctor is a female doctor, a colonel. And she says, okay, Mrs. Lawson, your husband is on his way over here. He says, okay. So my father is dark. There's no way you can't tell he's black. When he gets up to the office, the colonel's secretary comes in and says, Colonel, there's a Sergeant Lawson here. And he said, oh, yeah, well, tell him to come right in. He said, yeah, but Colonel wanted to tell him that he was black. He said, come in. So he comes in. The doctor looks at him and says to my wife, we got a problem here. He said, what's the problem? He said, well, you're black and she's white. He said, no, he's black and I'm black. He said, oh, man, now you got a real problem. He said, look, I won't say nothing. We're not saying nothing. We're letting this go through. I was the first African-American to be born on the base.
Oh, my God.
So what happened is that before I'm born, I'm out waiting to have what do you call those women that deliver the babies before the house,
the
you know,
the
old days? No,
the
there's
midwife.
A woman. Midwife.
Midwife's
out in the house. Midwife is with my mother, and she's African American, and she's looking at my mother, and she says, I just want to ask you, and I don't want to be insulting, but are you black? My mother says, yeah, of course. She says, oh my God. I said, where are you staying at? She says, I'm staying at such a hotel. No, you can't stay there. You can't stay there. I'm getting my brother to come and get you. My brother, so she, during the delivery, my mother's all upset. Now, I can't say, I said, well, you should be. My mother's going around to the movie theaters, going to stop and shopping at Woolworth, doing all this stuff. No one said nothing to her. All right, so now, since the baby could be black, oh, we got a problem. You know, just like Harry and Meghan here. Baby could be black. Anyway, so the thing is that I'm delivered. And I'm in the waiting room. I'm in the delivery room with all the other babies. I'm in there, my father comes in to look at the baby, and there's other people there looking at their babies. And this captain says to my father, "Captain, is there anything you're looking for? You're looking for my son." He says, "Your son?" "Yes." He says, "That's him right here, Michael." Anyway, the woman came, had her brother come to the hotel and get all my mother's stuff out of the hotel room, and he took her to this woman's house. That was in 1945.
So, Michael, you've been breaking racial barriers since birth.
So the thing is that this woman, okay, I stayed, my mother and I stayed at her house for 6 months. And then my mother went home, brought the baby home. I don't know when my father got out of the military. I can't believe now. Maybe it was 48, 49, something like that. Anyway, I'm in the military. I'm in the Air Force now. Ain't Army Air Force. I'm in the Air Force. And I go and I got a high marks on my entrance exams, et cetera, et cetera. And my grandfather wanted me to go into the Army because he knew everybody. He knew everybody in the Army. He's a colonel now, a major now. He knows everybody. He said, "I'll get you in. You won't go to Vietnam." I said, "I'm not going to Vietnam. I'll go to the Army. I'll go to Vietnam." I went to the Air Force. Still went to Vietnam. So, hey, what's the story? So Ed took me out of school. They took me out of City College. That's another whole story, right? Oh, please. Anyway, the thing is that I chose to go to Colorado instead of Mississippi. Those are two places to go for electronics, radar. So I went to when I'm there, my mother told me, "Listen, you have to see an aunt of yours." Okay, I said, "Fine." So the woman comes to pick me up at the airport.
Keesler Air Force Base. I was born there.
Yeah, right. Well, forget Keesler. Anyway, so this woman picks me up while I'm at the Air Force Base, Lowry Air Force Base in Denver, and she takes me to her house. "Oh, you're going to spend time with me while you're here. How long are you going to be here?" "Oh, I'm going to be here at least 11 months. This woman, I said, "I didn't know you were my aunt." She said, "My mother didn't talk to you like my aunt." She says, "That's what she called me." She says, "But I was the woman who delivered you."
Aww.
This was the midwife. And she was now the dean of Denver University. So you see how things change and how things can be. And you never, ever know. Now, if my mother never would have gone there, I would never have met this woman. My mother would never have had the experience about the racism because she never experienced it. And she didn't experience it while she was there until she was with this woman. But things are so wonderful when you have a lot of experience, because then you can explain it to your children. And we have a situation that you guys are doing, a conversation that can open up people's eyes. People, you know, there's an old saying that, what's his name? I can't remember his name. Those who don't need new eyes, all they need to do is open them wider. The things are happening that you can see, but you need to be able to open your eyes and understand what is going on. And a conversation about race and racism and what's next needs to be more, it needs to be help people get enlightened. When more people listen to that, they will be able to get enlightened, but they have to be able to be in part of this conversation.
Amen.
Elise? Well,
yeah.
Jason, what do you think about that?
I think that's a great advertisement for the conversation. And not only are the eyes of the participants opened, but Jason and Diane and I have stretched as well. We are more woke than when we started 41 weeks ago. So, you know, if you stretch out to be fully self-expressed and to share oneself with others, then they benefit, but then we benefit as well. I should say, and we benefit as well.
Right.
Yeah. And we invite people to the conversation. You have our information. We are not an online presence,
right,
which is actually people have been inviting their friends and family to come to the conversation. And if there are any of your listeners who are interested, then we invite them to the conversation. And I presume that you and your producer have our Zoom contact information.
And you could give it out. You can give it out right now, as a matter of fact.
Jason, do you want to do that?
Yeah, what I may do for simplicity is if folks are welcome to text me and then I can forward them the information. And so if folks have a pencil or a way to take this down, they can text me directly. This is Jason. My number is 704-575-3351.
And you don't have to go in there unarmed like I was, that Diane put me in the lion's den with unarmed last week.
Oh, my God.
But you don't have to do that. But so now, if you were listening today, you aren't unarmed. But if you go in there tonight or tomorrow or next week and you just heard about this, just listen. That's all you have to do. Because when you listen, you understand a lot of things that go on. And you understand things more clearly. So,
yeah. Well, and
go ahead.
You know, if I can say real quick, Michael, and it has been a topic of conversation that I know myself I have avoided more because I was uncertain how to be in it or approach it. And what makes a difference is a willingness to engage. And I think that's one thing that we've done very well organically, is created a very safe place to be in a conversation. Wherever people are at, however they're coming to it,
mm-hmm,
however they're starting, but beginning. And like you said, listening is a key attribute. And engaging, mm-hmm, being willing to step into it is what the moment calls for.
You know,
absolutely. You know, Michael, we have people from all over. Everyone is not just from North Carolina or just from Charlotte.
Right.
We've got people from several states, many states actually, and a couple of countries. We have someone from Vancouver, Canada, that calls in from time to time. And we've had a young lady from Kenya, Africa, who actually stayed up till 4 o'clock in the morning to get on our call. So it's moving people. Yeah, it's moving people, and it's charging people with, what do you want your life to look like? Do you want it to stay the same? One of the things, that my quotes that I love is, you can't unsee it, and you can't unhear it. So once you see it and hear it, you make a choice in your life whether you want to live by yourself as an individual who has so many prejudices that you're in a box, or are you the type of person that wants to look for humanity? And that's what we're striving for all of us, to look for humanity in all of us and think outrageous some of the system disparities that occur in our world just because of what you look like.
Well, you know, Marcel Proust wrote a line that I love. It's the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to do.
There are people who are white who never, ever had to worry about what they think, where they go, what they do. And they were quite happy with that and didn't put very much into thinking about anyone else. So what we're also doing is training these people to have this conversation. Because when two people sit and talk, they wind up seeing that they are more alike than different. And so the conversation breeds a conversation and gives people the openness and gives them the facts, the data. We do all of that on our conversation so that people can go intelligently and say, oh, but wait a minute, that's not necessarily true. African Americans are 16% of the population, but 40% of the criminal justice system. Those are real numbers. Those are real people. And so we look for humanity.
And as Cassius once said, the fault there, Brutus, doesn't lie in the stars, but in ourselves.
Yes.
And that's what it is. If you don't want to go out and change anything, don't blame the other person.
Yeah. That's true.
You can't blame the other person. You know, there's so many people that sit back here and say, well, that damn guy, he shouldn't have been in office in the first place because, hey, listen, I know the man, the orange man. I've been in plenty of functions with him when I was in New York long time ago. You know, people were laughing at him then.
It's true.
They were laughing. I remember two or three times we were at a fucking Charlie Rangel's birthday party was one of them. Charlie Rangel used to be one of the congressmen from New York, and I can't remember who was with, but it was about three or four of us talking together, and he kept walking over and like, okay, you got to stop talking, I'm here. That's the vibe that he gave off, and we continuously talk, and then he just added something to the conversation, which really didn't do anything for the conversation in any way. And we stopped and listened, and then we turned back and started talking to one another again. It was like, okay. And then he went away. And the people looked at one another, and they started laughing. And so the thing is that, why would the thing was, these people wanted somebody. Oh, their excuse was, we wanted some kind of change. Yeah, let's change. Why don't we get a tiger in here and be the president of the United States? That'd be change. We need somebody that's not a politician, because a politician, they're killing. Well, Jesus Christ, this man is not a politician, and look what he did. They screwed the entire world, not just our country. So you got to know what you want. And the fault lies in us.
Yes. And you know, Michael,
not
true,
in anybody else.
That was a group looking for a leader. He came with all his baggage. And when he came, he was just right for people's mindset, who were intent on, because remember, we're just coming out of the Obama, two terms with Obama, and they never got over that. And so the hate was swelling, and all they needed was Trump because he was their oxygen to the fire. They didn't
but the problem is they did not cause that. We caused that because we have people say, everything is fine now. We have Obama. What we got to go vote for? What we got to do this for? Everything. No.
Right.
You don't,
right.
Hey, if you don't feel hungry, okay, you don't eat. You don't feel hungry, don't eat. Okay? But that only lasts a few little bits. You got to start eating. You can't just say, hey, all right, we don't need nothing else. You're for, we have people around here who did, do you know how many people, when this orange man, the former president, got into the White House, he got in by, I think it was 74,000 or 756,756, something like that.
65, yeah.
But there were over 10 million people in those three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, who did not vote.
That's right.
So the fault is in ourselves if these things happen to us. We're always going to have those people there, but those people don't make this happen. We make it happen because we don't do anything about it. That's what I want to say. We don't do anything about it.
Well, they woke up in Georgia, and we have two senators because of it. Like I said,
yeah.
I'm watching some immediacy. I'm seeing some people. And what I also like is there is no leader. I don't like leaders because leaders tend to have too much hubris at some point in time. And then when they change their stripes, the people are standing there with nothing. So I like the idea that leadership in terms of communities, be they Asian, Hispanic or Black, is kind of spread around. You know, it's kind of spread around. And the idea that someone like Stacey Abrams would do what she did is because there was no leader telling her what she could or could not do. And in other places, there are other little Stacey Adams all over the place. All over the place. Stacey Adams, you should have stopped me, Michael. Isn't that a shoe?
Absolutely. I know. I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, but the thing is, yeah, we can't. This is not going to help us because, see, the problem is they control the state. And they will get rid of those daggone senators ASAP. Because now they control, if they don't like how the county voted, they can remove that county chairman, remove that whole board, and change the vote. I don't know how that's legal, but that's what they passed.
That's what they passed. Judges are so important. Did it pass?
What they passed, but they passed that bill.
Yes, they did.
They
passed
did.
That.
And what happens next? I heard you say earlier that it could go as high as the Supreme Court, and I pray that however high, whatever court it goes to, that it will be struck down. Even though Trump put hundreds of judges on the bench,
right.
There are some.
Plus.
Say again?
I said 300 plus.
312. There are some of those judges have already ruled against Trump during his lawsuit. Let us hope that that when these voter suppression laws that so many states are passing come to the courts, that there will be people who believe in fairness and justice for all people. And we have the responsibility, as Michael, you said, it falls to us. We have the responsibility to be talking to our state, our local state and national legislators. We should be calling our senators and our representatives and telling them, even if they are not of the party that we voted for, they need to hear from us.
Yes.
And they need to hear from us, particularly if we are African American, or other peoples of color. We need to, they need to know what we think. And there, and I think that we fall short in that department, that we will complain among ourselves and not do what we need to do so that they will know what we think. Because they're going to run again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many of them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they don't know nothing else. They got to run again. Why do these guys hang on and hang on and hang on and hang on? Because they don't want to go nowhere. They have no future. If they can't get some sort of gig involved in the Washington area, they got nothing. You know, these guys,
that's
oh, yeah,
true.
Well, they're lawyers. Yeah, but half of them, 90% of them never saw a courtroom. Just like that former ex bar that we had. He never was in a court, never in a courtroom. He don't know how to spell courtroom. So, you
well,
know,
I'm not too happy about us enjoining these people with what they've done, because it's going to take a while, and there are going to be a couple of elections. There are even elections this year in certain cities and states and local municipalities. And so I'm concerned that we are breeding this type of person who has no idea how to govern. That's number one. And they haven't seen it in their party. And so because they don't know how to govern, they just sit there and make noise and they distract from what it is. So along with enjoining them and taking them to court and making sure, and no matter where they have to go, I pray they don't have to go past the state appellate court, because I really don't want it to go to the Supreme Court. I don't trust them.
But it will.
But
it will. It will. Because none of these courts, all these courts are going to rule against him, and that's where it will go. It will. So it's going to take years. And that's, see, they figure that this will take years to be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
And in years, they can get their people in place.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is all about.
That's a strategy.
Oh, it's a strategy. And Trump has done this since he's been in existence. Sue. And if you sue me, it's going to take years because I got money to make it last year.
So it goes back to what you and what you and Eloise said. It goes back to the people. The people did Georgia. It had nothing to do with them. They were shocked. They didn't know what to do. They were so shocked they had the president on the phone begging for votes. That's how shocked they were, because the people did it. But how do you maintain that sense of urgency? How do you maintain that excitement that if they could do it in Georgia, well, perhaps we can do it in Florida, and perhaps we can do this and do that. When those 60,000 felons were able to vote because of a ballot initiative in Florida, said that people like John Legend and some of the basketball stars, they took them to court because they said, you're buying votes. It's clear you're Democratic, so if you pay their fines and fees and restitution, obviously they're going to vote your way. We have to be more grassroots. Shirley Chisholm taught us that. And we have to be consistent, and we can't let up because they don't let up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct.
Well, and I think
well,
oh, yeah, do you want to wrap? Did you want to?
No, I don't want to have a final thing. I'd like to have just a final comment from all you guys.
Yeah, let me make this that, Michael, and thank you for having us. When we spend the time on what's so, it allows us to look at the historical arc. So after the period of Reconstruction, which gave way to Jim Crow, we actually had black representation in the South, with the light of that candle extinguished by voter suppression. And so when we deal in society in the 21st century where people assert that racism no longer exists because we've had the civil rights movement, because we had the Civil War, it's like, well, actually, when we know our history and how voter suppression, intimidation, and tactics from poll taxes to literacy tests were used to disenfranchise major voting blocks, it is the same. That was very effective at building political power in the South of whites. It is the same arc that we're seeing today with the rapid spread of voter suppression under the pretense of election integrity. And so I think that's the benefit when we engage in this conversation, to look at the decades and decades and centuries of how racism has played out, so that we can see, there it is again today. Mm-hmm. We see the pattern. So this conversation must continue. And, you know, thank you for having us here today to continue that.
Well, I mean, hey, what can I say? I mean, you have graced this broadcast with some fabulous insight. And I want to thank you, Jason. And Eloise?
Yes, I want to thank you as well, Michael, for having us on. And we look forward to expanding the conversation as a result of being here. We invite your listeners to join us at 7:30. We meet at 7:30 tonight. Jason has given you his phone number as contact. And
can you give it to us one more time, Jason? Before you,
yeah.
Eloise, I'm sorry. Can you give it to us one more time?
Yes.
Yeah. Area code 704-575-3351. That's my cell. So if you text it, then I will respond and send you the Zoom dial-in information.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And Eloise, finish up what you were saying. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I do want to comment on a book. Jason spoke about Dr. Jawanza Kongjufu and the conversation that we had breaking the school-to-prison pipeline. Dr. Kongjufu wrote a series of books on rearing black boys, and he has since written about rearing black girls. However, I want to highlight his book called Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys. Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys. And that has to do with educating black boys up till about the third or fourth grade, at which time they lose interest in school. And we're not talking about every black boy. But it is, we can generalize to black boys in schools. And so I highly recommend that book to your listeners, or they can simply Google him, and there are a number of YouTube talks that he has given over the years.
And what's his name again? Say it again.
His name, I'll spell it for you. It's J-A-W-A-N-Z-A, Jawanza. And the last name is Kongjufu, K-U-N-J-U-F-U. So it's Dr. Jawanza Kongjufu. He's out of Chicago. Might be someone you'd like to have on your podcast someday.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Diane?
Let us not forget Little Aston. That's where we started.
Absolutely. Diane?
Yes, sir. Well, listen.
What
do
you have to say?
We do this every now and then. I thank you so much for this platform, for this conversation. And as always, Michael, it was fun. I thank you for that. There's a movement, and the movement is knowledge. And once people have knowledge, be it historical, empirical, once they have knowledge and realize, wait a minute, it's not me, it's the system. Conversations like ours, and those that are like ours, they're necessary for affecting change. And think about what we're missing as a country and as a world. Einstein left just before Hitler invaded. Had he not left, I don't know if MC Squared would be around. He just missed him. And so We miss so much brain power, so much creativity, so much from people. All they need is a chance. All they need is not equality. I want equity. And so we're losing that. And so you're wondering why the country is the way it is, why we've dropped down in mathematics and science. It's because we're not utilizing all of its people. I always say that when I read a historical book and somebody is the first or the best, even Babe Ruth, and I know you're going to get letters about that, but those people are winners with an asterisk. Because if black men and Hispanic men were not allowed to play ball, then we don't know that Babe Ruth was the best. We need to stop doing that as human beings because we're losing our country. And for me, you know, I've worked for an airline for many years, and I've visited many countries. Democracy is the best deal. So, again, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And come back and visit us, and you can speak
yes.
a little bit.
Well, thank you. Thank
and
you.
By the way, you said, let me say this. You said there were 8 people on our group. It was not. It was 13. I think you fell asleep in the middle of it.
Oh, me? I didn't say that. It was me. Hey, I didn't know why I was here. Why am I here? I didn't know why I was here. Lee, what do you have, Lee? What do you have to say?
Is he still on?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, hey, listen, maybe he's not. The thing is that I want to say, hey, this has been fabulous. This has been
yes,
fabulous.
Yes, Michael, I'm still here.
Oh, you're okay, good, Lee. Wrap it up for us. Tell me what you want. What's the story?
Say it again.
Say it again. Well, what do you think needs to be done about what is going on here, what we said today? And wrap it up.
Well, people need to educate them and just respect and love one another. Like I've said for a long time, you know, change with this type of, with racism and all of that, it starts in the heart. If you have love in your heart, then that's what you're going to do. You're going to treat people like you want them to treat you. So, and until that is, I guess, internalized and people care for one another on a basic human level, you know, then the prejudice and racism will continue to exist in our midst.
Well,
I always go back to the scripture, and I'll say this is my last thing, and people who know me are going to laugh, but one of my favorite scriptures is Galatians 5:22. It says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and peace, and it goes on about what God wants for us. And so I try to set the foundation of how I live, you know. God wants us to be happy, so I want you to be happy. I don't hate on you. You know, you're a product of the Almighty. So that's how I look at it. So, but thank you for letting me talk, Michael. I'm going to go and see if I can't get ready for this call tonight, but I'll be in touch.
Well, I am grateful, and my dag on Skype has screwed up my studio here. I don't know what I have. I was going to play some here for you guys, but I don't know where it's at, so I don't know what the hell to do. But anyway, I want to thank you guys for being here and giving us some class for a change, instead of having me ranting and raving, which I do
that's
most
true.
Of the time.
I've been on it. That's true.
So it's
a pleasure.
Yeah,
thank
you,
Michael.
Yeah. I mean, I think I only went loud a couple of decibels once or twice, but you know, normally it's for 3 hours I'm ranting and raving. So
yeah.
So I'll be able to have my Glenn Libet. You know, normally I have one during the show, but I didn't have one during the show. So I have my Glenn Levitt, and I'll be perfectly set, but I can't do it because I got to go throw some balls with Blake out here, since I won't be around to do that for another week. So normally I do that on Fridays, but anyway, I'm gonna get on your Did I get your Zoom contact information today, Diane? I didn't get it from you.
I probably texted to you.
No, you didn't text it to me. Text it to me now.
All right, I'll text it now. It'll be. I probably texted to you 5 times, but I'm gonna give it to you again.
Oh yeah,
I will do that.
All right. I'll be on doing some. So I'm gonna be on a little late, but I'll be there.
Come on and join us.
Yeah, I will.
You'll learn a lot. Gracie, Dr. Gracie's gonna be our speaker tonight.
Oh, wonderful. That would be great. That would be great.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Well, thank you.
I want to thank you guys. You have been great.
Thank you.
Great inspiration to me. Information-wise, it has been great. Conversation, that's what we need to have. A conversation. Okay. I'm going to see what I can do with this. Since I can't read what I'm playing here, I'm going to play it. And I hope this is something I thought I wanted to lead out with, but since I can't tell what it is, I'll just play it and see what it is. Hold on.
Good evening from New York. I'm Chris Hayes. There's a lot going on in the news, a lot going on in the country, many challenges we face. And amongst all that, the only thing that really unites the Republican Party right now is not any kind of particular policy. It's not even fealty to Donald Trump. No, the defining project of the Republican Party right now is just holding on to power, even at the expense of democracy.
This is a conversation with Charles Clyburn, which is it's really great. Chris Hayes made
stop the certification of a Democratic election, but of course it didn't stop there. As we've been following on this show, people like Mo Brooks in Alabama, Josh Mandel in Ohio, and Jody Heiss in Georgia are running campaigns for office, fundamentally grounded in the idea that the last election should have been overturned because, well, they won't quite say it this way, but because they didn't like the result. And Republicans are, of course, now using their power in state legislatures across the country to push restrictions in dozens of states designed to make it harder for many Americans to vote. There's not really, I got to say, much of a substantive agenda here. Some stuff about immigration. They don't like cancel culture, etc. The big thing, the big central focus is just literally do whatever it takes to keep power, whether that means lying or fear-mongering or undermining democracy. That is the project right now, the Republican Party. And this was clear even before the last few months, right? Back in January, remember, we had that runoff in Georgia a day before January 6th. While the Democratic candidates on the ground in Georgia were offering this substantive agenda to voters, right? We're going to protect health care amidst this pandemic, including COVID relief. We're going to send out survival checks. Republicans are making an argument not based on policy, but pushing the big lie and more importantly, offering a message that boiled down to, keep them out of power. Fear the Democrats. Keep them out of power. Keep us in power or else. That was the argument down the stretch. So now, we have a 50-50 Senate with Democratic control of the House, the presidency, the very, very rare trifecta in a polarized nation. And that has all come despite the structural conditions of the country and the polarization of the two coalitions that mean Democrats have to win by larger and larger margins. House seats are gerrymandered largely to give Republicans an advantage. The Senate is massively biased and getting more so to give outsized power to rural Republican voters. The Electoral College is structured such that even though President Biden won the popular vote by more than 7 million votes, not a close election, beat the guy by a lot, just 44,000 votes in Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin separated Biden and Trump from a tie in the Electoral College. Over the last 28 years, Republicans are consistently losing a majority of Americans in big national elections. They are increasingly focused on entrenching minority rule. And the place where all of this comes together, right, the through lines that course through our democracy and our democratic life is in the use of minority rule in the United States Senate via the filibuster, which, of course, makes it impossible to pass almost all legislation without 60 votes. Now, many Democrats now say that needs to change, and as a result, Republicans are quite palpably freaking out. Axios reports that President Biden recently met with historians to discuss getting rid of the filibuster. and is, quote, fully prepared to support the dashing of the Senate filibuster rule to allow Democrats to pass voting rights and other legislation for this party. And Senate Republicans, you can sort of see the fear in their eyes. They see the writing on the wall. You got Democrat after Democrat coming out for some form of filibuster reform, including relative moderates, institutionalists like Amy Klobuchar, who you wouldn't necessarily expect to do. So Senator Angus King of Maine, writing in the Washington Post just today, if forced to choose between a Senate rule and democracy itself, I know where I will come down. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer is pushing hard for the passage of H.R. 1, that comprehensive voting rights bill that would likely require weakening or getting rid of the filibuster.
I would like to ask my Republican colleagues, why are you so afraid of democracy? Why, instead of trying to win voters over that you lost in the last election, are you trying to prevent them from voting?
Now, in response to the prospect of losing the filibuster, Mitch McConnell has been threatening to go bonkers, right, to lay waste to the Senate, making it so that nothing can be passed, everything would grind to a halt, it would be a non-functional body. And one of the things he's trying to counter is the notion the filibuster has fundamentally been used as an institution to preserve white supremacy in America. You know, Barack Obama pointedly made this argument last year at the funeral for civil rights icon John Lewis when he called for equal representation of all Americans.
And if all this takes eliminating the filibuster, another Jim Crow relic, in order to secure the God-given rights of every American, then that's what we should do.
Another Jim Crow relic. Not mincing words there. So then yesterday, when Mitch McConnell was asked about the historical use of the filibuster to suppress black votes, he said this.
It has no racial history at all. None. So there's no dispute among historians about that.
That's a bald-faced lie, as bald-faced lies anything Donald Trump has said. McConnell's spokesman later claimed the minority leader was referring to the origins of the Senate filibuster when he made that comment, as opposed to its actual use, which he certainly didn't seem to be. Now, the origins of the filibuster are, in fact, kind of random, almost accidental. They involve Aaron Burr, the guy who shot Hamilton, and a ruling on an obscure bit of Senate procedure. The actual use of the filibuster, as it's developed, has been, almost more than anything, a tool of the white supremacist South and a cudgel to block civil rights. Starting with one of the great villains of American history, John C. Calhoun, who first realized it could be used to preserve the power of the slave states. 1922, the filibuster was used to kill an anti-lynching bill that would combat the Ku Klux Klan. Infamous segregationist Senator Strom Thurmond filibustered for 24 hours straight to stall the Civil Rights Act in 1957, and a record-setting 60-day filibuster almost killed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Of course, back then they had to actually do the talking. Actual historians, people that do study this, as opposed to Mitch McConnell, say the filibuster has been used to deny black rights for more than a century. Not exclusively. It's been used for other stuff, but that has been a central theme here. And now Republicans are willing to use it to block a bill that would prevent the GOP from suppressing voters, specifically African-American votes, and would have the effect of making our elections more fair. By the way, for everyone, like, you know, Election Day is a national holiday, would be good for Republicans to work on that day, too. So then the big question is, what are Democrats willing to do about it?
Hey, thanks for watching our YouTube channel. You should know that you can follow today's top stories and breaking news and catch up on your favorite MSNBC shows all in one place. Download the NBC News app today.
Now, what have – oh, I still got my guest with me. Diane, what do you think about that? Diane?
Yeah, Ellery? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
What did you think about that? About these voting rights apps? These voting rights there's 40.
What do I think about it? You know what I think about it?
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Let me ask you a question. 43 states are now institutionalizing, changing voting. 43 states.
Right. What I think about it is I am so sorry. I'm so sorry that I'm fighting my grandmother's battles. The only way it's going to stop is if we come together as human beings. I said it before. But there are white people who are silent in their agreement. There are people who really want change because they too see, how could you be a corporate CEO and not want everybody to have money so that they can utilize your services? Power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you're a CEO, you don't want everybody to have money because you want to be better than everybody. Therefore, you can't look down on everybody.
Well, yeah, man has a problem with that. Human beings have a problem with that, yeah.
Well, but that's the problem. You don't care if everybody got money. You can't look down on nobody if you don't have the money. You can't
depend on them. It's variable. I don't care if you have $500,000 as long as I have $1 million. That's how they're thinking. And I don't have a problem with that because we're in a capitalistic society, whether we like it or not. Democracy is the waving of the flag, but the flag doesn't wave for us the way it does for everybody else.
Well, Jason, what do you have to say about that? Jason?
Well, I look at it this way, Michael. You know, it's the pretense which is just so obnoxious to me. If things like the filibuster are so important, what I am not aware of is Republican efforts to ensure that each of the 50 states implement a rule that looks like the filibuster in their Senates, right? So Florida, Georgia, Texas. I mean, which of those states has the equivalent of a filibuster in their legislative bodies? And I would assert they don't. So, you know, it's just so obnoxious to have these pretenses put forth as the cover and the basis for what otherwise is promoting an agenda whereby white authority and power is institutionalized, expanded, and allowed to rule against the desire of what I would assert is the majority of this country to move forward in a state of equality, equity, and principled relationship with each other. So that's what I have to say.
Eloise, you have something to say about that?
Yeah, I do. You were talking about the 43 states. So among the 43 states, they have those lawmakers, right-wing lawmakers, have introduced more than 250 bills.
Yes.
Designed to make it more difficult for black people and people of color to vote. And reading from the moveon.org site, they also include young people.
That's right. They don't want young people to vote. Hell no.
They don't want young people to vote because they tend to be more liberal.
Yeah.
So we really need to encourage our senators to vote for the People Act, which is in the Senate now, and also the House of Representatives Bill 4, H.R. 4, which is the John Lewis bill.
Yeah.
We need to encourage, that's the Voting Rights Act, and we need to be encouraging our representatives, because they haven't voted on that yet, and our senators to support the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. The man literally sacrificed his life for us to vote. And we need to vote.
That's
there should
the
never
problem.
Be a time when we don't vote.
This, you know, I tell people to call up, hey, look, did you have a birthday this year? Yeah. Well, then, did you vote this year? If you have a birthday, you got to vote. You can't forget to vote. You vote every single year that you have a birthday. And when you don't have a birthday, you're dead. You can't vote. So don't worry about it then. But if you're breathing and you're on this side of the grass, you got to vote. And
that's
means
right.
Vote
we have
in,
to vote.
In, that's right. In the schools, school boards especially. Or you get a teacher like that nutto down there in Arkansas. You need to vote.
Right.
If you're previous,
so you should be voting for, you should be voting if your school district is an elected, if they are an elected board of education, you need to be, you need to know their stance, and you need to vote for them. And if you are in a state where the judges are city, where the judges are voted for, they are elected by the people, you need to know their stance, and you need to vote. You need to, we need to remove people who don't do the work for the people, all the people.
All the people, absolutely. And that's a major problem when you have judges that you can't trust. That's a major problem because, you know, you never know when you're going to be one person that needs the judge to be honest. You know, it's like I told the kids, we were doing in my class, I used to teach, and I used to tell the kids, we were going over the film, 12 Angry Men, the original film, the black and white version. The color version is garbage. Don't even bother to watch it. The black and white version with Henry Fonda, really great. Now we took 3 weeks to analyze, adjust, see how the film was shot, photography wise, script wise, innuendo wise, and then we actually did a mock trial. My students got credit for my class doing it. They got credit from the English class doing it. And they got credit from the history class where they had to research the information on the court system. Because I gave them a made-up trial. It was very similar to 12 Angry Men. I drew the picture of where everybody sat. Remember, nobody had names until the end of the film. You knew two of the names. Everybody was a juror, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way down to 12. And the thing was to take these, the kids, and do the research on what it took to be in an actual trial. And then we filmed it, and the kids that were in the arts classes, they got a good mark for their art class because we did it. And what we did was the kids that were in the drama class, they got marks for it for the speaking and the dramatization. We filmed it. We actually did it 3 weeks or more than 3 weeks. I think this was like half a semester, I think it was. And because we analyzed the film about all the different things that each one of these jurors brought into that film, in the storyline, what each one represented. And each one was very important. Each one of those 12 jurors was very important. And we analyzed each one of those jurors and who wanted to be what. And we didn't do it exactly like that, but we had also someone that was on trial. And the main thing about the whole thing, and if you look at it again, the whole thing was set off because the judge did not give them direction. Because this was a Hispanic kid. It took place in New York. And he did the murder. End of story. We don't need a trial. He did it. So there's a lot of things that, which I love that film. And but the next time you get a chance, you need to look at that film and you see when the prosecutor presents his case to the jury, and the judge now needs to charge the jury. The judge said, "Well, you heard the evidence. This kid, he will be charged with murder in the first degree. And if you find him guilty, he must have all 12 people find him guilty. and come back with a conviction or non-conviction as soon as you can. End of story. That was it. No compassion. No nothing. You knew there, and the first thing is everybody found them guilty except for one person. The first, well, let's get over this. When in the court, when in the room with the jury room, they said, let's take a hand. Who's guilty? How many people think he's guilty? And everybody put up their hand except for one guy. He said, I don't think he's guilty. Well, that was the oldest man there. But he didn't put up his hand. And he finally said, I think we should think a little bit more about the evidence. We should, he's probably guilty, but maybe we should think about it. And the first mouth out of one of the other jurors was, I ain't got time for this. I got a ball game to go to. So everybody needs to think about what they need to do. Everybody needs to think about evidence that they're given. Everybody just needs to think.
Mm-hmm.
And end of our conversation today. I want to thank everybody.
Again.
And as
good night,
Emily
Michael.
Bergman
maybe we'll
said,
see you later.
Yes, yeah, you'll see me later. I don't know what time, but you'll see me. And remember, there is, as the Iron Man in the White House came in, and he came in with all the show and glitz, no business like show business. That's, remember, that's what this is all about for the last 4 years. It was show business.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great weekend.
No business. Like
thanks,
show business, like
wow.
No business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go. The makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. The closing when the customers don't come. Word before the show has